Third, concern for the poor. As you must know from whatever life of Elizabeth Seton you've already read, well, she was herself from a well-to-do family by human standards in those days. Yet from her youngest years, even as a child, as a young wife and mother, then as a widow, and by that time she became quite, if not destitute, poor herself. A great love for the poor, admitting in one of her letters, this is after she was widowed, that she was supporting 6 children of a relative. It also tells you something about how vocations come into being. Vocations are born in good Christian homes. Concern for the poor, and therefore to educate the poor, care for the poor. And this, I've said it more than once, maybe almost the last time I've got a chance in this course to repeat it. I know whereof I speak. Those of us in religious institutes today engaged in very important apostolates like education, hospitals, welfare work, we must look to whom we are caring for and serving among the people of God. All too often, it is those who can afford our services. Who can afford to pay the $2,200 tuition to go to Loyola School on Park Avenue, where I live? A day school, a high school, $2,200 tuition. They don't even give you a lunch for that money. No wonder the church is so often identified with the rich. Do you know what we're saying? And we're living in an age of the church's history, surely in our country, where whole institutes will disappear. I make bold to say, those only will survive who themselves practice poverty and concentrate in their care of the poor. All others, God's justice will wipe off. Did we quote the phrase from the Savior? Evangelizari pauperibus misit me. What does that mean? He sent me to preach the gospel to the poor. Christ opened his public life, as recorded in Luke's gospel. Remember, on a Sabbath in the synagogue, he read the scroll and read this passage from Isaiah, closed the scroll and told his astonished audience, this day these words were fulfilled before your eyes. Christ came to preach especially to the poor. And as Pius XI, during his reign, sadly declared, the church has lost the poor. The transforming power of the Eucharist. Elizabeth Seton, more perhaps than other saints or those with special charisms that we have so far seen, emphasize the importance of devotion to the Eucharist as communion and as presence. And she, by the way, this is 200 years, really, before our day and in the heyday of Jansenism. our people did not go to communion often, and the Eucharist had nothing of the high, sublime respect that it now enjoys. For her, a convent began the moment there were even two sisters and what? And the Blessed Sacrament. This is a good paraphrase of Elizabeth Seton's Eucharistic theology. No Blessed Sacrament, no convent. And I would add, as good a convent as the members are devoted to that Blessed Sacrament. Confronting secularism with the cross. That is a direct quotation from Paul VI. How did Christ overcome the world? By the cross. That doesn't mean that the church will not do other things. But the one thing she has to do, if she's going to follow in the footsteps of her master, and along with him, fulfill the purpose of the redemption, she must be a church that not only bears the cross or tolerates the cross, but loves the cross. Elizabeth Seton had more than her share. That's why she became a saint of the cross. Criticism, misunderstanding, the loss of a loved husband. And then, at her age, by her standards, she died at the age, I believe, of 47, which is very young. She wore herself out. You don't work through sleepless nights, travel as much as she did, and care for so many sick and diseased people without suffering the consequences. She did. She died under the cross. But that's why her work lasted and why she has been canonized. As you read the letters, especially of Elizabeth Seton, you are struck on the one hand by her simple, docile obedience, and on the other hand, by her strong, almost feminist sense of autonomy. She would write to bishops, in one paragraph, humbly ask for their advice. In another paragraph, tell them what she thought. And they'd write back. And she'd write back again. But always, once she recognized that the ones who were speaking or writing to her had authority, she had no difficulty obeying. Finally, adaptation to American culture. There are two words that sound almost alike, but they are poles apart. They are adoption and adaptation. Elizabeth Seton's charism was not an adoption of American culture. It was adaptation to American culture. In other words, not only being a Native American, but a well-educated person, a much-traveled person, one who, by the way, also knew other cultures besides her own, it helps, I think, a lot. I think every American, if possible, should spend at least some time outside of our country. That is a general, broad recommendation, which is not meant to be specific. It has two benefits. one, to better appreciate what we have, and second, to better understand how different we are. See, would you sisters from Italy, would you agree that the United States is different? Sure is. And it takes considerable supernatural skill, grace from God, and light from on high to know what is good in American society, to which our spirituality can be adapted, and what is simply foreign, even to our faith. More than one American community of what we say is foreign origin has been unnecessarily placed on the defensive for not being American enough. As I've told how many, both major superiors and chapters, people who talk that way to you don't know what they're talking about. The United States has room for many cultures. The one thing that those who are seeking perfection in the United States dare not do is, in the laudable effort to be American, to cease even to be Christian. And it's not impossible. Now the church's expectations. The four elements that I've there identified are again taken, as I've been saying all along, from the church's documentation on Elizabeth Seton. The first hope the church has is to help convince Americans that America, modern America, is fully consistent with evangelical holiness. That you can not only save your souls, you can become holy in following the Gospels in modern United States. And that not only, you might say, by sufferance or by persecution, but there are elements in American society that are positively conducive to sanctity. I wonder if we could name two things in American culture in the United States that are positively conducive to sanctity.
Generosity.
Please?
Generosity.
Generosity. Americans as a people are a generous people.
They're compassionate too.
Please?
Compassionate too.
Compassionate. Mm-hmm. One more.
They're charitable.
Please?
Charitable.
Well, that would be the same as the one, generosity.
Oh.
I think our freedom, properly understood, helps immensely. For example, I think Americans would have no trouble accepting a Benedict Joseph Labra. You know about him? He's a saint who could hardly find a confessor because he was so odoriferous. We're not sure 30 years, 40 years that he didn't take a bath. American tolerance and respect for other people's even oddities and idiosyncrasies In other words, no matter how exotic the grace, in the United States, people will allow you to cultivate it. Second, Elizabeth Seton is declared by the church to be a pattern of the true role of women in the church. Not merely the role of women, but the true women. Name three characteristics of Elizabeth Seton that should characterize the true role of women in the church today. Three characteristics. Jean.
Well, she was a wife, a mother, and a
religion. Well, that's good. I'm thinking real fast. So, that married people, all right? Mothers. And what else?
A religion.
Please?
Religious.
A religious. So that women in the United States can become holy as wives, as mothers, as widows, and as religious. But I was trying to. What would be any other suggestions?
Sister? A great concern for children.
Great concern for children. Oh, isn't that true? And isn't it sad that so many American women, in the name of feminism, have rejected children? Another feature of Elizabeth Seton that Catholic women in today's church can emulate. Obedience to the church. Respect for the church's authority. Third expectation. Strength and growth of Catholic institutions of learning conducted by religious. The Pope, in canonizing Elizabeth, invoked her aid that many religious, especially religious women, would follow in her footsteps, discover the vocation that God must be giving to thousands, to, in many cases, reestablish schools that have gone out of existence. Catholic schools, I hope you appreciate this, are on trial, and their future is precarious. It is only as assured as we shall have dedicated religious vocations, especially of religious women. And finally, the church expects, in imitating Elizabeth Seton and through the graces that she can obtain for the church, progress in the ecumenical movement. We make as much progress in the ecumenical movement as we Catholics do two things. First, as we ourselves are good Christians. As the church has been telling us since John the 20th, is the 22nd or 23rd? 23rd. As the church has been telling us, there was division in Christendom because Catholics were not good Christians. It was sin that divided us. It will be virtue that will reunite us. Number one. There is no better way of promoting the ecumenical movement than sanctity among Catholics. How the Protestants love to see a well-behaved, truly God-fearing Catholic. The second thing, and both are reflected in the life of Elizabeth Seton, is a great love for those who are Christians but not Catholic. You combine those two and the ecumenical movement is solved. A truly holy Catholic Church whose members love because they respect the grace in those who are not Catholic. And there will be no problem about reuniting a dismembered Christendom. And with that, with reluctance, we turn to Saint Teresa of Lisieux.